Hello and welcome to Mixtape Rewind, where we cover the Beastie Boys to the Beach Boys, Stevie Wonder to Kiss, from Anthrax to Zappa, and everything in between. So please sit back, relax, pop in a tape, and join us as we journey back in time to discuss your favorite bands and music.
Hello, this is Mark, and you're listening to Mixtape Rewind. I have on tonight from the Dr. Quinn Cast podcast, Kelly. How are you doing, Kelly?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing great. Yay. We're talking about a great album.
Yes, I'm excited to talk about this album.
This album is one of the more modern albums that I consider listenable from beginning to end.
Mm-hmm.
But that has a lot to do with the fact that I was in a rental car when the album came out, and the album was in the car, and it wouldn't, I think it was a cassette that wouldn't eject. So it was either the radio or that.
And this is still that like amazing time when stuff came out on cassettes.
Yeah. And it was, and it came with the car. It's not like we had it. Like it was like from the rental company. And so this is kind of weird.
They had decent taste, the rental company.
Well, I think whoever had it before us, we had to like report it. It's like, oh, there's some tape stuck in there, man.
They got like some like hip new manager that's like, all right, we're revamping all the cars.
The car was like a lame car, too, in my opinion. It was like
Strokes cassettes in all the cars.
think about that. It's a good way to push an album, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if mentioned.
He was like the manager was like personal friends with Julian Casablancas or something. So he's like, all right, listen, got it.
We're gonna have at least 300 cars listening to this constantly.
Yeah, and like they're all gonna be like broken.
My vow to you is in the Hollywood Hills, you will be listening to the sweet sounds of Is This It. Even though I, in the first take of this recording, I called it This Is It.
Yeah.
Which I'll own that, I guess.
You sure did.
I sure did. I'll throw that in, why not?
You sure did.
And so it's the Strokes, Is This It. And this is a band that you like a lot. This is a
in my like regular like rotation daily playlist appearance kind of thing, and they have been for years.
Now I've never seen them live, but they're notorious for their live shows. You've seen them live.
I have, yeah. I saw them at Governor's Ball in New York. Mm-hmm. Let's see, 2014.
And you know, so that's interesting because the album came out in summer of 2001, July 30th, 2001, and so you saw them 13 years later.
Mm-hmm.
What was, was that?
When we saw them, it was actually like they had not had any albums for a few years, and they had not played any shows for like a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I forget how long it had been since they had done shows, but like it had just been like forever, you know? Like I think people were kind of like thinking that it was sort of, maybe they were done doing that or, you know, and then just like out of nowhere, like they were, going to be at Governor's Ball. And actually it was crazy because like they were there and then Jack White, because Jack White's second album had come out that year. So I get, I just like randomly stumble upon the, you know, like the poster lineup thing for it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, the Strokes and Jack White are going to be there. And I'm like, the Strokes have not even like played. Like, it was like one of those things where like, I just kind of like never had planned on seeing them just because they like weren't playing shows. You know?
Yeah. They're not really that kind of band that seemed to be doing like major tours after this. They kind of vanished, really.
Well, I mean, like they still are. They're like now they're doing a lot more as far as like playing. Like they play at music festivals quite a bit, actually. You know, and I like have them like, you know, on Facebook, like their page or whatever. And they're pretty regularly actually like at festivals, like in the US and in foreign countries too. But it seems like they kind of recently have picked up doing that. Cause like they really didn't do it for a very long time. And then they were going to be a governor's ball in 2014. And then I saw that and I was like, we have to go. Like I was pretty much like, it was like the Strokes and Jack White. I'm like, okay, like money is no object. Like we need to like go to New York and go to this show.
Right.
And it actually, the way that it turned out, so even like when I saw the lineup, but they didn't like say like who was playing when. So I didn't know like what day, you know, stuff was doing. So I'm like, well, we just have to get tickets for the whole weekend and we're going up there. And as it turned out, they actually, it was Saturday night, like they played back to back. It was like the Strokes and then Jack White. Mm-hmm. So it was like the most like amazing, like back to back combination.
No, I saw the White Stripes a lot during the period of time that this album came out, because I was one of the earlier fans of the White Stripes. And I remember when the Strokes album came out, they were a big deal. I'm a lot of kind of, you know, in New York, there are always like a big deal band being pushed, and maybe not these days, mm-hmm. but back then. And I remember they were kind of media darlings, and they were kind of really being pushed really, really hard. But mm-hmm. I remember a friend of mine, he was just really into them. And he's like, no, they're the real deal. They're the real deal. And I don't know. I just never went to go see them, but I really regret that now. Because I'll watch stuff on YouTube of their live performances, and they look, it's fun, but they're also pretty good. Like, they're really doing good versions of their songs.
Yeah. The only, I don't know if you've, like, of this album, there's a really good live show of it that's like the MTV $2 Bill concert that mm-hmm. you can watch, like, the whole thing on YouTube. It's a phenomenal, like, phenomenal live show. Like, really, really good.
I kind of remember that, where all the tickets were $2 or something.
One thing about their live stuff is that, like Julian tends to sometimes either like forget words or just sort of not. I don't know how to describe it, but it seems like there's always a period of time, and this definitely happened when we saw them too, where like he just kind of like would be like singing and then kind of like trail off a little bit, or kind of like do like a little like, he kind of just like, I'm like, I don't know if he just like don't remember the words mm-hmm. or if he just like are doing something else intentionally, but it didn't ruin it for me. I mean, I'm like, I know this song and I know what it is. And like, he kind of like when we saw them, and it had been like years since they even played live and stuff, and there were even like a couple of times where like he kind of seemed like he was forgetting the words, but he kind of just would do like this like funny little like, I don't know, like the way he like approached it was funny, you know, like it was still like a really good show.
It's kind of a Rolling Stones type of way of approaching it, because the Rolling Stones were notorious for being a terrible live band. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen, and this is a documentary I would love to review with you in the future, maybe, called Cocksucker Blues, which mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen this, but it has some of the worst Rolling Stones footage you'll ever see from the late 60s and 70s. And mm-hmm. it's just one of those things. But Julian Casablancas is, I'm not saying he's doing a performance, but what he's doing on stage, he's pulling it off. So mm-hmm. that's why I can't say it's like the Rolling Stones or Mick Jagger, because I don't think Mick Jagger was really pulling it off. I'm a big fan of the Rolling Stones. I love the Rolling Stones, but in the studio, I like them.
Yeah, but like not so much live.
But when you throw these guys on stage, like, you know, they're a pretty tight band. But even when they're kind of wavering off, because Julian Casablancas will sit down sometimes, I notice, and there'll be like a table. And it's like, what is he going to start building, like a Lego set or something? And he's just kind of singing to my... It's interesting to look at, but he's not...
Like he totally pulls it off somehow. Like, that's how like I felt like when he would kind of like sort of trail off.
But it's
like
not maybe awful, forget, you know, like it's
not,
good.
Like
it's...
not sing the line or forget it or whatever the deal was. I was like, this isn't ruining it though. Yeah. Like it's still a good show. Like he's totally pulling it off. Although like the crowd was like so rough. Like, and I don't know if it was just because like, I mean, I think at the show that I was like super hyped up because mm-hmm. they hadn't played live for years. So it was like kind of really hyped up and everything.
But that's like, New York, lady. Come on. Crazy. New York shows are tough.
I mean, like we spent the whole day, like we got there, like as soon as the gates opened and we went like to the front, and we spent like the whole day up front, and like we never, like we like just didn't do anything basically except sit there. And it's like, I mean, I was like during the whole show and everything, I mean, I was like totally sober. Like I hadn't been drinking or anything, because I was like not going to be getting up to go to the bathroom all the time and lose my spot, and, stuff like that. So, like, I mean, like, we were, like, you know, sober. Like, we maybe had, like, a beer, like, for the whole day. Like, we were, like, you know, just not, And then, like, these, at the last minute, like, so it was, like, in a way kind of disappointing because, like, we dedicated the whole day to, like, you know, being up front and waiting for it. And then, like, at the last minute, and they were actually, they were late when they came out. Like, you know, we're, like, sitting there waiting, and, like, they're, like, you know, they came out, like, maybe 20 minutes late or something. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they come out, and then, like, it's just like everything, it was like mad rush.
Well, yeah,
like,
I mean, that's usually how the front goes. It's
And I mean, and it's like, but it was very different because, like, I like with, well, so then, like, that was all really crazy, but then, like, when Jack White came on, all the crazy people left, and then Jack White was very tame. Like, you could be in the front then, and it was like,
you know, you get all the CBGB kids up front, who, and all these guys, like, you know, I know where it is, you know, and it's like, yeah, I don't think you've really gone there. Maybe you've gone to the side place, but you never really went there. And it's, you know, you do get these, like, you know, these Brooklynites, and you get these people, and people are like, how do you know? Blah, 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 blah. Because I know all these people. And not all these people, but I know the types. And I've been in that front row because you want to see the band. And then all of a sudden, like, I was front row for Nine Inch Nails at a Lollapalooza, and I had a bruise across my chest for about 2 weeks because of the I got smashed against the rail.
And, there was, you know, like,
it's just terrible.
So this is something that, like, Pete and I still talk about occasionally, but, like, so when we were, like, up front all day, and there was, like, this other dedicated person who was, like, up front the whole time. And it was this, like, teenage girl, and she was from Texas, and she was there with her parents. Aww. So, like, we were actually really, like, I mean, because we were both, like, whoa, when we were, like, teenagers, like, our parents, like, flying from Texas to New York, and, like, you know, like, we're just, like, wow, our parents, like, would.
You're like, are you dying or something?
Like, I mean, we're just kind of like, wow, that's kind of crazy. Like, I mean, like, kind of like cool.
Yeah, it's nice, I guess.
But
yeah,
like, also crazy. And they're like, okay, so they're up there, right? And, like, the mom and, like, the parents actually, like, they seemed kind of old. Like, I mean, like, I think the girl was, like, 15 or 16. And, like, her parents, like, seemed a little older. Like, you know, maybe they'd been a little older when they had, you know, the kid and stuff. So, like, they're kind of a little older. And the mom's, like, leg was in a cast.
Oh, my God. And they're, front, like, and they're right
it's
up
like
front?
It's like, I shouldn't be laughing, you know? But, like, it was just, like, so, like, she's, like, in, like, a cast, like, a boot thing or whatever. And then, like, when it starts and it's, like, super insane, and we're, like, what happened to her? Like, oh my God. I mean, like, because, like, we were, like, seriously, like, what happened to her? Because, like, there's
no one. You see, like, crowd surfing or something. Grab my cash, Jimmy. Melanie, grab. I'm going to name the girl Melanie. Melanie, grab my cast. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Well, welcome to New York.
Yeah, right.
No, but it sounds like you had a good time. And, yeah, I've seen shows at Governor's, like, on that location. I've never been to that festival. But but another thing I want to mention is the producer of this album is Gordon Raphael, and he hasn't done two. I mean, he did other The Strokes albums, but he also worked with Regina Spektor. I don't know if you listen to Regina Spektor, and that's
she actually The Strokes have a song that they did with her.
Oh, really? I had no idea of that.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of hers because it's like every album and every song is like a different structure, and it's a completely different, and it there's something about her music I think it's really well thought out, and so I think it's really interesting that also her music is so different than the Strokes music comparatively. Like, you wouldn't really think that one has anything to do with the other, but I like the way this album is. It's very raw. It was very criticized for being so raw, and the way people refer to it as a demo. People really put it down. I'm a big fan of lo-fi music. So this isn't, I don't think this is lo-fi music. So what I say is, we start playing the album.
Let's do it.
And, here we go. This is the, whoops. And this is the title track. Is this it?
Hey.
I think it's a good song.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would choose this as a title song.
Yeah.
I like the little tape, like.
Yeah.
I always like that kind of stuff. It's like very, yeah.
I think it's a really, I think it's really catchy, and it's just has like kind of that classic Strokes sound, you know, like just like when you think of the Strokes.
Yeah,
like
I think that
you think of this, like you think of stuff like this, and like the flow of it, mm-hmm. and just like it's.
You don't.
It seems very like relaxed and kind of unstructured, but also really strangely put together.
And I'd say it sets the mood for their style, and you're right. It's a very much a Strokes song.
Mm-hmm. And like I don't know like how familiar you are with like their not first album, the one that wasn't on the cassette in your rental car.
I know their music. I don't know that well. Yeah.
So they have, my favorite three albums are their first three albums. I'd like all their albums. Like, I think all their albums have good songs and, like, redeeming qualities and stuff. But then after their first three, they get kind of, like, it's, like, a little bit different. Kind of, like, the style. Where like, this is still the Strokes. Like, it's the Strokes style, but, like, it kind of takes on a different form. In some respects.
Do you feel as though they matured over the years?
But then what's interesting is their most recent album, which came out in 2020, The New Abnormal, I think is very reminiscent of like early Strokes. Because they kind of like changed with a couple of albums, but then their most recent album, there's a couple songs in particular that I'm like, this is like classic Strokes. Hmm. Like totally sounds like, you know, original Strokes kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think when you listen to like a new album from them, do you think like they've grown or they've refined their style, or like some bands don't change, which I think works really well for those bands, like Weezer. You know, Weezer is a band that outside of their more very recent albums, pretty much put out the very similar sounding albums.
Right.
And they were all very good. I think that, you know, Weezer's a fun band, but what do you think? Like, do you think like this album is like untouchable versus like their other work, or do you think it matures?
I think that this album and their second album, Room on Fire, are their strongest. Like, if I had to pick the two albums, like those would be the two. And I think they really like kind of set the stage of comparison, at least to me. And I think that there are a lot of other Strokes fans that kind of feel the same way.
Mm-hmm. They get compared too much to the Velvet Underground, I think. When I hear a Velvet Underground song, I can tell it's Velvet Underground. You know, it's not like...
Like, you're not like, oh, is this a Strokes?
Right. Like, one other thing, and I really have to give credit to the Strokes for this, is they're a regular rock band, but they're not using the same old progressions. They're not using the same overused chord structures that we've heard a billion times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like they're overly complex either. It's just, I think, in a way that, I'll bring up the Rolling Stones again, they approach it from a fresh point of view with music. And that's one thing I've really liked about this particular album is they're playing those basic chords that every guitarist in the world knows, but they're using in really unique ways. And I like that. And I like the rawness, especially about this particular album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they really, I think they would kind of diverge from the rawness in the future.
Yeah, they do. And I would say definitely about like their third album, First Impressions of the Earth, is definitely a lot more like polished feeling and feels maybe like a little bit more produced and stuff. But I still think it's a really good album. Like there are some really good songs on it.
But this is not the band.
Really strong, but it is like more, kind of like a little bit more polished. And then I would say their subsequent albums are kind of a little bit more like, I don't know. I don't even know if I want to say like the word is like more like mature, but like, I mean, they kind of are in a way, like where they sort of like became more, maybe a little bit more polished, but.
I mean, I don't know if polished is something you can avoid, you know, you just get better, right?
Like, yeah.
But I just, When they go into like a studio and it's like, you know, super $1 million studio and you're spending all this money, it's like, I don't know, sometimes you get, it ruins things. And I just don't think the Strokes are really that kind of band. They're not meant to be polished.
Right.
And they seem like they do their best work on stage, I think.
Yeah, I mean, they're good live. I mean, like, you know, when I saw them, like, we talked about it at length, it was really good. And I mean, I've watched a lot of, like, footage of their shows and stuff. And, yeah, they're really good. Very good time.
So I'm going to play this. This particular song, I like the guitar sound a lot. I mean, I like the guitar sound throughout, pretty much. But let's play some of this. Another thing that you get with their production is the like kind of overblown distorted mic sound, which I always love. And it really comes side by side and goes right along with all of the indie music that was coming out around the same kind of time, but the Strokes bring all of the melody to it, which I'm really happy about. That's you know, something maybe Neutral Milk Hotel wasn't really bringing to the table. although I love Neutral Milk Hotel, they don't really have the same singability as the Strokes. But yeah, the King of Carrot Flowers just doesn't, it's not as singable. This next song is one of your favorite from the album, right?
Yes. Well, from the album and just ever.
Oh,
like,
okay.
You know, for the band, Barely Legal. I love this song, and it's long-standing been one of my favorites. And when we saw them, they actually opened with it, which was very exciting because I love it so much. So it was perfect.
I love it when a band opens up with a choice song.
Yeah, definitely.
Very tasteful. Do you think that... so one of the album's covers that came out was banned in the U.S. And it shows the crotch of what I guess is a woman. I don't want to point out anything. Yeah, I don't want to assume anything. It's just, I'm just using my eyes. Sorry.
Yeah.
And they felt it was too sexy, or not too sexy. That's my Spinal Tap reference, which you'll get once you see the movie. Wait, here's the song. Well, wait, I'm going to pause it, because in Spinal Tap, he goes, they're saying, well, it's too sexist. And he goes, what's wrong with being sexy? Not sexy, sexist. Oh.
Yeah, they thought it was, like, too, like, sexual. which, the cover for the U.S., I actually do like. The cover, like, the artwork, I think is...
It's like a fractal or something. I don't know what it is.
It's, like, nice to look at. Like, and I like the color scheme. I might like the cover from the U.S. one better than the, like, lady with gloved hand or whatever.
The lady with gloved hand looks like it was from a 1984 album by, like, a band called Lillian Axe or something. That's, like, a metal band.
Yeah.
It doesn't really fit the Strokes, but at the same time, I'm just kind of curious. I want to go down that rabbit hole and see who designed it, whose idea it was.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it like Janet Jackson? I don't know. That'd be awesome. But here's your song. I just want to say, this is a great song to open up, I think. Like, I can really picture, like, this opening up and setting the entire tone for the entire set.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole song, like, kind of like the first one that we talked about, I think it's just, like, quintessential Strokes.
Mm-hmm.
And it has, like, a really good energy. Just the whole song, I think, is just, it's so well put together. I mean, it's just really fun to listen to. And I think all the parts of it are interesting.
Now, is it The Strokes? Strokes? Because every time I see it written, it's different. But I'm seeing it written very often as The Strokes with a lowercase t and v.
Yeah, and I've seen it that way a lot, too. So I guess I always say The Strokes, like The Strokes.
Their album cover says The Strokes.
Yeah, so I just, like, assumed, like, The Strokes. But then, like, on Sirius, it was just The Strokes. And Peter and I had a conversation about that, actually, like, in the last couple of weeks, because I was like, you know, it's just The Strokes.
Let's see what ASCAP has to say.
And then we speculated that maybe it's because of, like, when the station, like, alphabetizes stuff, if they went by, like, for everything, like, the T section would have, like, 90% of things.
Right, it's like Strokes, comma, The, you know.
Yeah, right. So I'm like, well, I guess that would, like, make sense in that context.
Wikipedia, it's The Strokes. Mm-hmm. I think it's The Strokes. That's what I'm going to move forward with. It's important to me that these things are said correctly, I think.
I mean, I went through a period of confusion with Arctic Monkeys, because I was like, is it Arctic Monkeys or The Arctic Monkeys?
It's Arctic Monkeys, right?
It's like Arctic Monkeys, but then it's like, I feel like, just if you're, like, conversationally, like, speaking about it, people would say, like, The Arctic Monkeys. Like, do you listen to The Arctic Monkeys, you know? And then I'm like, is it The Arctic Monkeys or is it just Arctic Monkeys?
It's 3 hours later and you're like, what? This is like beer. This is like beer discussion when you're out with your friends and you're like, you know what? I'll stay for you have a meme that you float around that I think is hilarious where, you know, it's like, I'm just going to come out for one. And it's like 2 a.m. But
you're, I think, like, it's 2 a.m. like, is it The Arctic Monkeys or Arctic Monkeys?
It's like, I don't care. But back in the late 90s and early 2000s, there were a lot of bands that started with The.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I always felt like that was kind of an issue. I would go to, like, Tower Records and it would be exactly that situation, because Tower Records is run by a bunch of people who it needs to be cataloged correctly. So it's, everything's under The.
Yeah. And then you're like, well, no, I can't find what I'm looking
for. It's like The aisle. It's like an entire aisle of The. But yeah, like The White Stripes. You're not going to call them White Stripes. People probably do.
See, that would be, like, infuriating, though, because
it's so different, right?
Well, I mean, like, it's like, I mean, like, it would be infuriating to have to go under T for everything, though, because it's like, if I go to a record store and I want to see what they have for the White Stripes, I go to W, and then I know that the White Stripes are going to be there. Like, it would be infuriating to be, like, having to sift through all of the Thes.
Well, I remember in Tower Records, it was all the Thes were together, at least for a period of time they were. It was idiotic.
So you're like, I'm looking for The Strokes. Okay, that would be like the middle 10 aisles.
Right, exactly. It's like an entire aisle of those. And they have the does.
Yeah.
I remember somebody was talking to me, and I referred to them as Everly Brothers. And he said, you mean The Everly Brothers.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, exactly. And I just walked away from that person.
Exactly.
You take things a little too seriously.
No, I meant A Everly Brothers.
But now, so this was a huge song for them. Still is a huge song. It's all over SiriusXM.
Yeah, this is one of their ones. Definitely, like, from this album and in general, that I think is...
Great song.
Yeah.
It really is just a great song. Like, if you... So, listening to this, I really think that it doesn't really matter when this was recorded. There's no period of time where it's like, this could be from the 70s or 80s or 90s, you know, it really could come from basically any period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about music in general sometimes, but other bands, you just don't have that. I think even the White Stripes, if you listen to it, there's something more modern about it. Mm-hmm. And it's not really a jab at the White Stripes. It's just, it's their style. Mm-hmm. And I like the throwback of this. I like the retro type of goodness of all of their sounds. And it's very organic. As a matter of fact, I would like to listen to this on vinyl, but I probably don't want to spend $40 or $50 on a record.
I have it on vinyl.
Oh, do you?
Of course I do.
Of course
yeah,
I do.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite albums.
All right. Do you have the UK vinyl?
I don't. I have the US vinyl.
Could you talk a little bit about that? Like, why is there a UK and US edition?
Well, because they're all slated to, release it and everything. And then 9/11 happens. And
Sorry.
The ninth track on the original, I'll say like original kind of in quotes, which then just became the UK version. The song was called New York City Cops. I almost said New York Kitty Cops. Wouldn't that be funny? New York Kitty Cops.
New York Kitty Cops. Little cops in my globe. Yeah.
That would be like some kids show, like Paw Patrol or something.
Yeah, exactly, like a little Billy Club. Yeah.
So New York City Cops, and there's a line in the song, like the chorus of the song actually is New York City Cops, New York City Cops, they ain't too smart. So then it was deemed inappropriate.
Now, Julian Casablancas, of course, grew up as a New Yorker outside of his Swiss education.
Yeah.
it's not his fault he grew up as a totally wealthy person. I mean, I can't hold that against everyone. I hold that against enough people. But when somebody can bring it to the table and have talent, it goes out the window for me.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the guy is a New Yorker, just like the Beastie Boys, kind of. Like, they grew up in New York and you're allowed to do it. You know, it's fine to me. But of course, with 9/11, everybody got super sensitive. They even banned the Spider-Man trailer with the World Trade Center in it,
Yeah. So,
I don't know if it was banned, but,
it wasn't really appropriate. So then they delayed releasing it, actually. So that then they, threw in the other song when it started, which I do like the song, that was thrown in there. Although I think if I had to pick between the two, I like New York City Cops better.
Bonus track, though. You might never have even gotten that song until a much later album.
Yeah, that's true. But actually, fun fact that I just recently was reminded of when I was looking into this. So they, delayed the release of the CD because of New York City Cops and 9/11. But the vinyl was actually released on September 11th. So even in the U.S., vinyls were released with New York City Cops on it on 9/11,
So this was, the album was already doing well in the U.K. before the U.S. release, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know when it got released in the States?
It was early October of that year, because it was supposed to be in September. Like, it was supposed to be around 9/11 or shortly thereafter, but then it was delayed because then they pulled the song and then put the other one on, and I think it was October,
because this is so weird. Because when I was in LA with the cassette stuck in there, that was in August, so I guess it must have been an advanced copy or something.
Dude, that guy was super hip.
Whoever had that car ahead of me, probably a record executive or something, and he's like...
Dude, I'm telling you, that was Julian's BFF right there.
I'm just making a note. I'm going to give my friend Michael a call, because I need him to kind of verify all this.
Yeah.
exactly, right? It was Julian Casablancas. I don't think he would... I think it was I forget the kind of car it was, but it was an old man convertible that we rented.
A demo tape in there.
That would be incredible, right? How cool would that be? Of course, New York got super sensitive, and everyone's we can't release this and that, we can't do all that. But, on 9/11, when things got released, on that date, Well, wait, you're saying the record got released on 9/11?
The vinyl did, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, of course, they didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah.
Or did they?
But then they're probably like, who buys vinyl anyway?
Yeah, I would probably say in 2001, who's buying vinyl anyway? I mean, I was buying used vinyl at that time. Yeah. I wasn't going and buying new vinyl. I still don't buy new vinyl. I'm just, I don't know. I don't know if I have any new vinyl, unless I have a friend with a record or something.
Yeah, I have, my more favorite albums.
Well, you guys have a collection. You guys are collecting, like, stuff from the Jack White collection, which is going to be, a retirement fund.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, so we have that going on, and, I mean, like, so we, like, collect that stuff, and then just, like, albums that we like a lot, we will buy on vinyl. Just, it's like a nice activity to like sit and listen to records.
Oh, I love it.
Like, we'll buy stuff that we like. We have like quite a few. Yeah, we have like a pretty good collection.
No, I love putting on a record and listening to the whole thing and, you know, flipping it. And, you know, there's something just really organic and wonderful, and it reminds him like when I was first discovering music. But it's a little bit of an effort to do all of that. So I'm pretty lazy. So yeah, I do tend to go to the digital stuff.
Yeah.
But this is another great, huge song for them.
Last night. Yeah. Which, this also has the music video where they're doing the Family Feud thing on it.
Oh, really?
It's a pretty fun video.
I think that MTV had an issue with them. Because MTV was playing music at this period of time. But, I don't know, I'm trying to remember if there was, like, something with the Strokes and MTV. Do you recall anything like that?
No, like really the only, when I think Strokes and MTV, I think the $2 bill thing, which is like one of the best like shows I think they ever had on there. I don't remember there being like a problem with it, but I was just a baby, so maybe that wasn't a literal.
You and your stroller. Your Strokes! I love the Strokes! I'll find it. But yeah, I'm pretty sure there was something, some type of beef. So, all right, what's this next song? Drum Machine.
I can't explain.
Yeah, this is a great song as well. I'd say this is a much more modern song for the time. Or is more appropriate towards like the scene that was kind of happening.
I think I found what you're talking about.
What?
I think I found what you're talking about. Good old Reddit. Does anyone know why the Strokes hated MTV so much?
Everybody hated MTV though at that point.
So then like keep saying comments about how the Strokes hated MTV, blah, blah, blah. What happened? I remember the time Julian smashed an MTV camera during the last night performance.
Wait, do you remember when you first suggested Strokes and I confused them with Oasis?
Well, that wasn't even like when I was suggesting it for this. Like, I think we were just talking about the music we listened to, and you're like, I never liked the Strokes because like those brothers.
The brothers are always fighting, man.
What are you talking about? I was like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Julian's brother, man. It's like Mark's high. I don't know. I don't know where that came from. I also, if you listen, it's such a kind of an insult, really, because not that there's anything wrong with Oasis, but they're really nothing like the Strokes.
Yeah.
But I still confuse them. Sorry. There's a big mishmash of music that came out of that period of time, which I just kind of grouped together.
Yeah.
It's you know.
Well, you know, like, I kind of think that does kind of happen, though, like, when, I don't know, like, when you're just kind of, like, kind of aware of what's coming out at a time, but you're kind of like, Like, I do that all the time where I'm like, say, like, with 90s. I mean, like, I listen to a lot of 90s music. There are a lot of, like, I mean, 90s bands
right.
from the era that I know really well.
Like the Cardigans?
The ones that I don't know well, it's like, okay, I know this song, but I can't remember which one does it. You right. know, or, like, you just hear a song and you're like, I know what this song is, but I don't remember who it was.
Yeah, like the Cardigans are a band that's kind of like, you just like one song.
Yeah. Or like it kind of happens like, I mean, because, you know, I know a lot of older music too, you know, like as we've talked about.
Yeah.
You
know, you're a big Beatles fan.
Yeah. And like, I mean, there are Tool. A number of like, you know, 60s bands.
Don't you listen to a lot of Tool? No, right. I'm just kidding.
Welcome to the Tool Shed.
Tool Shed. What's up? What's up, Kay?
Now I thought I was scratching again. She's all like, "Did you hear Tool? Tool? What? Tool?
Tool?
But like, just like stuff from like, you know, like the 60s or 70s that like I know the song, but it's not like one of the bands I listen to all the time. But it'll come right. on like Sirius or something, and Pete and I will both be like, "That's what that band is called." We're like, "What? I don't remember that."
Yeah, I've always been bad with band names and album names and song titles. Always. It's just been just terrible.
Family relations. Who's good with the brother?
Yeah, like, well, I do remember the whole Oasis conflict, and it just made me hate them so much. I was like, these guys are so annoying. So, I'm going to pause it here. Do I pause it here and play the next, or...
Well, I suppose... Go into when it started, which is since we're playing the U.S. album,
mm-hmm.
The one that was put on there. And then after that, we can play New York City Cops.
All right. So after this song.
What they did. And then this is what we missed.
You know, it's funny. You do listen to these songs and... It really sounds like they all went into a studio and just recorded it. Like, there's no... One, you know, each song sounds like similar guitar sounds, microphone sound, drum sound. Everything is really, really...
Uniform?
Yeah, it's really... I mean, it's you know exactly who you're listening to. There's no, like, crazy, all out of nowhere piano solos or... It's not like a crazy yeah. over the top type of production, and I personally just I really love that.
Yeah.
But yeah, you just know what you're getting.
This song a lot, and mm-hmm. I think it's just very like Strokes-y, like the guitar riff and like the drums and everything,
yeah.
like just totally like you were just talking about, like you know what you're getting. Sounds like the Strokes. But another thing I like about their songs, like this album specifically, is I think all the songs are really like easy to listen to. Like they just sound really pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think that like the lyrics can be like deceptively deep for how like kind of lighthearted it seems like on the surface. But like with this song, for example, I like really like the lyrics, and I think that like he could really like read into the lyrics a lot, like the like won't decide, but he won't debate, and like has to be well dressed because he hates to fly. You know, like there's stuff like that that like, and I think all their songs really like have like, you know, lyrics that you could really like dissect mm-hmm. and like, you know, get like deeper like meanings out of it. But then also like it's so like just like nice to listen to at the same time.
Right,
like,
the singability of the Strokes is way up there.
Yeah.
And another thing, one thing I would love to know about is what their recording setup was like. I kind of get this vibe that they really did just perform this like in a matter of a week or something. Do you know anything about like how long they took to record?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head.
Like Exile on Main Street from the Rolling Stones is one of my favorite albums of all time. And it, because it kind of, it creates this mood that you're kind of walking into a bar and it's just, there's a certain live atmosphere. And I think that this particular album really captures, maybe it's not Exile on Main Street, of course. I don't think anything is Exile on Main Street. But it does capture this kind of live band feel. It feels like there's only like maybe five microphones being used. You know, normally there'd be like dozens and dozens of microphones being used. And this, it just feels like really stripped down and really nice.
So, according to Wikipedia,
that's your source.
Yeah, that's my source. My impromptu source. They spent 6 weeks in the studio, but they usually only recorded songs once.
Oh, okay.
Julian preferred raw efficiency.
Julian preferred it raw. That should be a bumper sticker.
Right.
Now, I know they recorded it in New York. Oh my God, what is the name of that studio? I had it in front of me. The Transportorium. Portarium. Which is kind of a famous studio. It's like a little hole in the wall, like junky studio. But it's in Alphabet City, so it is kind of a junky studio. Alphabet City is basically where you would go to, you know, score like heroin and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Maybe, yeah, I guess around this period of time, this is around the Scott Whelan type of like OD on heroin type of period of time. And yeah, it's like a really tough part of New York. One of the last tough parts of New York, I guess. And yeah, I mean, I kind of like that whole gritty thing. I hate to always say like it's a New York thing. But
yeah.
I think that they really do kind of push this New York kind of CBGB type of dirty attitude out there. Mm-hmm. Did you guys have the opportunity to go to CBGB's? Oh, no, it was closed by then.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So, no.
Sorry. You missed nothing.
I got my time machine and I traveled back.
Honestly, I went to CBGB's a bunch of times and you just feel like you want to get a tetanus shot when you leave the place. It's disgusting.
So, yeah.
Awful. So wait, was that
sounds like the kind of place that Albert Ingalls would have liked.
Yeah, he'd particularly like the bathroom, which there's a toilet in there somewhere, I've heard.
Albert Ingalls and Tom.
You gotta hear that morphine? You got something better, kid. So should I play it now? Or I wasn't paying attention. Was that the song?
Yeah, right. So, right. So the song that we just listened to when it started was the replacement song. So
I think it's a pretty good replacement.
Yeah, and, like, I think it is good. And I think, actually, that song, like, I've just sort of, like, read things and, like, articles and just, I don't know, people talking about it and stuff.
Yeah.
And that they thought that it was, like, a weak song. But I like the song a lot. And I knew that one before I knew New York City Cops. Then it was kind of like a nice surprise because then I was like,
oh, I'm surprised that they pulled this. I am a little disappointed that they would pull New York City Cops because of a simple.
Yeah. Like you almost like kind of wish that like the Strokes would have just been like, no, we're doing it. You know, like that they would have just been like, we're not going to give in.
Yeah.
Like you kind of would have wished that, but.
But here we go. We can make believe. And that's what this would be. Even the intros is so different than the rest of the album, so.
Which of course when we saw them
Sorry.
In New York. This was their encore.
Oh, really?
Which I totally, like, I called it, like, when they left, and I was like, if they're doing an encore, it's obviously going to be New York City Pops, because they haven't played the whole show, and, like, they're in New York. So,
yeah, you can't, like, not play a song that has New York City in it. Now, this song is very different than the rest of the album.
I think this song is so incredibly catchy. Like, it's one of those ones that just gets in my head.
I'm just... It really just is so different, though. Yeah. Giuliani got on the phone on that one. Hello, Julian.
What about the song of your pregnant?
We can't have that. It's gonna be
a New Yorker or what?
Right. Let me ask you a question, Julian. Where were you on 9/11? Huh? You want to be a part of this investigation? Pull the song.
Oh, there's probably some, like, conspiracy theorists out there somewhere.
Yeah, like, analyzing the album cover, right. And, you know.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
And it somehow relates to COVID.
Big time. Yeah. It's all crisscross. It all ends up right here where we are. Because of Julian Casablancas. So his dad owned the Elite, or owns the Elite modeling company, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So I used to work at 524 Broadway in Manhattan with Chris Hassler. And we had one of their offices in our building.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we... There would be a lot of times we'd be in the elevator looking at these girls and it's like, what the hell's going on? They coming with us? Like, is this a new employee? But no, they'd always go to the modeling floor. So that was never anybody famous or anything like that. Just beautiful women.
So, speaking of women, I was scrolling through the Wikipedia page and it talks about the picture on the UK one with the naked lady in the gloved hand.
Oprah. So, I'll call it Oprah.
Yeah. So it says it's by Colin Lane, and it's the photograph is of his girlfriend at the time, and it was spontaneous, and she came out of the shower, and he just wanted to take
It's an artistic photo. Picture. There's nothing... I don't even think it's that sexy. I mean, It's a nice photo. It's not like an erotic photo or something.
Yeah. Well, he said he was trying to take a sexy picture. So
is that what the leather glove was?
His words, not mine.
Yeah. I think, again, I think it would be great for a heavy metal band from 1984. I just don't see it with the Strokes. I think the Strokes are...
I'm like, okay, Colin, explain the glove.
No.
How spontaneous was this? Explain the glove.
Now, would you consider the Strokes, and I'm not talking about the way they look, do you consider them kind of a sexy band? Like, kind of like the Rolling Stones have a certain sex appeal with kind of, you know, everything. You know, like, there's something about the music that is extremely, like, rock and roll. It's very emotional, and it's very, like... active. I don't really know where I'm going with it, except that do you consider them kind of sex symbols? I guess I am talking about the way they look.
I guess I would say yes. Like, I mean, I think that they do have a thing going on with, like, the way that they present themselves.
Like, I think Julian Casablancas is a really cool looking guy. Like, I think he's a great front man. I think he has a lot of sex appeal. He has a baby face, which doesn't always work, but I think
well,
that
I've heard that he looks like a dad.
you heard that? It's like, he looks like a dad. Well, he kind of is a dad. So, It's like
Source, his son.
Yeah, exactly. He's like 31-year-old son or something. I don't know. How old is Julian Casablancas these days? In his 40s?
I think he's in his 40s.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
I think he was like 23 or something when this album came out.
It's just that there were bands at the time, which I don't think could bring these type of things to the table. White Stripes, of course, did, you know? But then you have like Neutral Milk Hotel, right? They're not a sexy band.
Yeah.
Well, Apples and Stereo, or, you know, some of these bands just don't do it.
Well, and I think that I'll keep referencing the like MTV $2 bill concert, because it is a really good, like, it's very good, and I think amongst the Strokes fans, they're, it's like a really like loved concert. It's really good, and it's kind of at like what a lot of people would consider kind of like peak era. It's like right after, it's like kind of like, I mean, it's like after this album, like they play this album front to beginning to end, whatever.
Yeah.
But then they also have a couple of, like, they have like a demo version of a song that's on their second album. It's actually like a really cool demo version.
I love demos. I love stuff like that.
But I mean, just like the way that they are like dressed and everything, they have like this very specific, and I think that it both worked very much for the time, but it was also like really like kind of unique with the time. I mean, like Julian kind of has like, he's wearing like jeans, like ripped jeans with like this like military jacket, you know, like that kind of thing. And then, you know, and they have like the like jeans and like it's like a jeans and blazer, or like maybe jeans and a t-shirt, and then like the Converse shoes. Like, it's like a very specific,
yeah, it's like kind of a cool throwback to the 70s as well,
style that they're doing.
Yeah,
which I think that in the period of time too, like when they were new, it was like really like refreshing, like, you know, they look really cool, like, you know, it was kind of like a, yeah, kind of like a little bit of a throwback, but also like kind of like with their own spin on it.
You know, there was a lot of pop music.
And of course, when they start too, they're all like young, you know, so they're all, it's just like a bunch of like young, cute guys, like wearing cool clothes and like making cool music, you know, like they're kind of.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking up like the top 40 for when the album was released. Just kind of, I'm just curious, because at the time, there was a lot of pop music being pushed around. Like, number one was Jennifer Lopez, you know, like in the pop charts. And just to give you an idea of what the kind of stuff people, you know, were being, having stuff shoved down their throat. And like Alicia Keys and Usher, Stained, Train, bands I've never heard of, like O-Town.
Wait, Stained?
Yes,
Train.
Stained.
Are you talking about the wedding episode of Dr. Quinn? Stained Train.
You sure did.
Sorry.
For those of you who want to listen to a Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman podcast, this is for each one of you.
Dr. Mike!
But I'm looking down. I mean, these are like all like these pop rock bands. Like, I never heard of Lifehouse. But then, like, Sugar Ray.
yeah.
You know, it was a weird time to enter, to bring this kind of music. You know, Smash Mouth, Uncle Cracker.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's Michael Jackson was on the charts with You Rock My World. It's a weird time for music around 2000 and 2001. So to have a band like this come out and get the attention that it did was really refreshing. And I was listening to indie stuff anyway, but that's kind of really why I was going towards the White Stripes. I thought the White Stripes really brought so much to the table, and I really never expected them to become even a 50th of like how popular they became.
Right. Yeah.
I really thought that they were Bowery Ballroom and that's it. Like, you're not going to get any bigger. You should enjoy it and save your money because you're going to be pumping gas next week.
Going back to upholstery furniture, which he has done now by choice.
Now he does it. He does like artisan furniture.
He does it for the love of the game now.
Click, click, click. 1, 2, 3. All right.
Yeah, exactly.
So, So, all right. So here's some more of this album. Any second now. You know, if you listen closely, it does kind of remind me of Destiny Child's Bootylicious, which was number 37 on the charts.
Bootylicious.
Bootylicious. Who's on this chart, right? Tool.
Oh, are they really?
Number 67, yeah. Mm. With Schism. Schism!
Welcome to the Tool Shed.
Welcome to the Tool Shed.
People are like, what?
Stay tuned for the Tool Shed.
Welcome to Toolcast.
I think a Tool podcast can be fun. Once. Once.
One, yeah.
A 10-minute podcast.
Only if we get to, like, play characters.
Even, like, the Strokes cast. Stroked. We're stroked. I don't know. It sounds wrong.
We're stroked. Oh, my God.
Stroking out. I don't know. Is that worse? I don't know. That sounds just...
Stroking it.
Welcome to Stroking It. It'll just be mumbling, you know. What's up? This is Stroking It. How you doing? Yeah, I've been listening to his bootleg.
We have Julian on the line here. Let's see what he has to say.
Julian, what do you think about re-releasing everything in mono?
Well, I think if we want to have it in mono, we want to put a double like that in the first place.
I think you would say something like, well, it's already mono if you listen, you know, to it two different speakers. I think, yeah. Does he do anything else? Like, is Julian Casablancas doing anything outside of the Strokes?
Yeah, there's Julian Casablancas and the Voids.
Are they any good?
They have some stuff that I think is pretty decent. They have actually a couple of songs that I really like a lot, but very different than the Strokes. Some of their stuff tends to get like a little bit more political, which I just don't necessarily enjoy.
Yeah, I don't really subscribe to political music either.
It's not really like what I'm in it for. No matter, like, what the viewpoint is, you know what I mean? Like, I just kind of am like, I don't really want to go there, like, when I listen to music. So, like, you know, it kind of does, it's, like, a little bit more kind of like that. But they do have some songs that are very good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, but definitely a lot different than the Strokes. We actually, when we were at Governor's Ball, he was there with his other band too, so we actually did see them as well.
Oh, that's interesting that he would do that, like a whole separate set.
Yeah. He was like, I don't got anything going on Friday, guys. I'm sure I'll do it.
He's like, how do I get like double access to the beer tent if I play twice?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then it's like interesting, because we were talking about like kind of like the whole like vibe of the Strokes and kind of like how they like dress and like present themselves, and his other band, I mean, like totally different, like the way that they like look and everything, it's like really different. I mean, like there's this like one dude that like looks like he's straight out of the 80s or something.
Well, his guitarist has like this big hair,
and like the way that Julian like dresses with that band, it was very different, like at Governor's Ball. Mm-hmm. So, like, when he was with the Strokes, he was wearing, like, a Hawaiian shirt. You know, like, it was, like, a Hawaiian shirt with, like, jeans or whatever. And, like, when he was with his other band, he was wearing, like, it wasn't really like a jersey, like, it wasn't jersey material, it was like a shirt, but it had like a number on it, you know, so it's kind of like a jersey looking thing with like a leather vest over it, like, just very different, like a very different aesthetic. And like, whenever I've seen him like with this other band, like, they kind of have like a different kind of like style going on, kind of like a different,
yeah, I would, like, imagine he is a stylist or something. Yeah. Like, everything is kind of selected very carefully. But I like his whole style. I don't think it's changed so much. I mean, of course, a Hawaiian shirt is very different.
Yeah. Well, that was even kind of, like, kind of different compared to, like, a lot of the stuff he's worn just, like, as someone in the Strokes, you know?
Now, I've seen that footage. Is that from Governor's Island?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was when I saw him, when he was wearing the Hawaiian shirt.
It's like, ooh, he looks like one of the Beach Boys.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is the last part of the album.
Yeah, and then, like, he was wearing the Hawaiian shirt, and then people were, like, throwing the beach balls around in the crowd, and he's like, yeah, I brought those.
They're blown up with my air. Oh, my God. And that's it. That's the end of the album.
I love the ending, too. Like, I love how it almost kind of sounds like the song could keep going, but then it just cuts off.
Yeah, I like it as well. It's like, I like abrupt ends. I don't like these, even though Rolling Stones do it a lot, you know, fading out. Yeah, I like it when it's just like, dun, and it's the end of the entire album. It's also like good on a record.
Drop. It's like the mic drop of the whole thing. Like, boom, done.
Yeah, and they're, being that they're such a kind of a charismatic band on stage, you would imagine that that is exactly the way they would do it. They would just end it and leave. Mm-hmm. They probably ended shows with that song very often.
It was, I don't remember, like, when I saw them, what their, like, quote-unquote last one was.
Before
then,
the,
like,
last,
when they were done and they, like, left the stage, you know, and then I was like, they're going to come back and play New York City Cops now. I was like, I'm calling it right now.
And you see the lady with the cast being pulled out, getting arrested.
Being pulled out by New York City Cops.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you cops should leave. You're kind of sensitive. There's a song coming up. You might not like it. It's very offensive.
Yeah, that's actually why they left the stage, because they're going to go hide out while they're here, and then when they leave, we'll come out and sing our song.
Julian, you kind of hurt my feelings with that song.
I'm stronger than that.
I'm an intelligent man.
It's like, I know you don't watch The Simpsons, but it would be like, there's this episode of The Simpsons where they're playing baseball, and they have, like, these, all these, like, major league players.
Uh-huh.
So, like, one of them is Daryl Strawberry, and the kids are sitting in the stands, and they're like, Daryl, Daryl. And then Marge is like, you can't do that. Like, he says something about how it's, like, mean, or he's, like, sensitive, and excuse me, I'm coughing. And they're like, oh, they're used to it. Like, they get this all the time. And then you keep going, like, Daryl, Daryl. And then it cuts to Daryl Strawberry, and he's standing out there, and he has, like, this single tear, like, falling out of his eye.
Like the Indian?
Yeah, so that would be, like, that would be, like, the cops would be like, this isn't bother us, Julian. But then they're standing, and they have, like, a single tear, like, falling out.
They're arresting the lady with the cast, and all of a sudden they start with their encore and, like, the tear. Poor cop. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for discussing this album with me. It was clunky only because of my technical issues, but I don't know. I had a lot of fun with this. It's an album that I'll continue to listen to. It's I did end up buying it at some point because I do own it.
And it's not on cassette anymore.
Well, it's still on cassette. It's probably still in that car in the middle of a junkyard somewhere in L.A. I just remember trying to eject it, and it just, like, every time you tried to eject it, it would flip to the other side. It's like, all right, let's just listen to it.
The car was actually just, like, possessed by Julian.
The thing is that we knew it was the Strokes. So, I don't know. Maybe they'd released a single or something, and we knew it was them. And
yeah, I'm sure it was like a single or two were out.
Because I
like
think they even had a billboard on Hollywood Boulevard, like for the coming of the album. Pretty sure of this.
And they're like, "Do you want to listen to it now? Go rent a car.
Find this car and get the free listen."
Rent the car from Julian's BFF.
That was like this is the way you could listen to the album, but you couldn't copy it. You know, you couldn't like bootleg it. It was stuck.
It was just enough to like leave you wanting more. You have to go buy it.
I just remember us driving through. We had to return the car, and we're totally lost, and we're in the middle of Compton. We have no idea. And it's like 4 a.m. because our flight is at 6 or something. And I'm like, why do we have to return the car to Compton? And he's like, we don't. We have to go to the airport. I'm like, why aren't we going to the airport then? And we're just like, arguing like two like married old ladies or something. Because old ladies don't get married. But it's it was just one of these weird things. Like all of a sudden, like we're in an area where everybody's like kind of hanging out in the streets at 4 a.m. I feel like I'm in, I don't know. It felt like an episode of Friday or something, or the movie Friday. It's like, can we just get the hell out of here? Put the top up at least. I'm just kidding.
I'm looking at their, like, I'm reading the thing about the promotion thing because I'm trying to figure out the dates as it jives up. So it says that they revealed the track listing on May 15th. Headlined a tour in the UK in June. Or it was announced in June, rather.
It could have been a UK import. I could have had the New York City Cops on the album. I just didn't notice it. I don't remember it.
Hard to Explain was the first single released June 25th. Blah, blah, blah. Britain.
She sure did.
Well, it was released in Australia, July 30th.
I noticed that. It looks like it was released there first.
And the UK release was August 27th. Maybe you had a UK one.
It's possible, I guess. Didn't get to keep it, though.
Sure didn't.
One more time for the fans.
Dr. Mike!
So high!
I love it when she says so high. That's awesome.
So high!
Dr. Mike!
What's this one? I don't even know. Oh, that's...
When the twig is bent, it can never grow straight.
Classic.
Yes, the evergreen.
It made it to the Strokes, you know.
Yeah.
But
If you're out there listening and you came for the good tunes and you either like Dr. Quinn or you previously questioned if it's really all that cool, our answer is yes.
After Governor's Island, I think somebody went up to Pete and they asked him about the show. He's like,
there's a colossal circus coming to town.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the way you looked at the entire concert.
But I think that we do good things for Dr. Quinn.
Yeah, 100%.
We bring fun to the world of Dr. Quinn. And
yeah. We've woken up. We're waking up a very sleepy franchise. Yes. I think it's been said that we are the best thing that has happened to Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman in 20 years.
Since Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman.
Yeah. Second best thing.